जय राम जय राम बिहारी जय राम बिहारी Gopi Jana Gaya Gauri Hari Gopi Jana Gaya Gauri Hari Yashoda Nandana Gajana Randana 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 Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Gopi Jana Gaya Gauri Hari Yashoda Nandana Gajana Randana Yamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Jai Om Sri Vishnupad Paramahansa Parabhatakacharya Satara. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Sukho Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath, Shamasundara Radha Kun Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Srimati Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Vrindamayi Ki Jai, Sri Ganga Yamuna Saraswati Ki Jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Yuga Dharma Ki Jai, Nitai Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. All glories, all glories, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Oh, Hare Krishna, good morning. So, very pleased to be invited to sit and try to speak something in front of their most beautiful lordships, Sri Sri Kishore Kishori. It's not just my opinion or our opinion that they're the most beautiful lordships. Srila Prabhupada, when he first set eyes upon them, was so pleased by their appearance. This was after they had arrived from Jaipur and were brought to the room he was staying in a temporary apartment, flat, a large flat actually, in Mumbai in a place called Seaface Park. I had been in Jaipur and had, along with another devotee, Srimati Devi Dasi, and my small daughter at the time, Saraswati, small at that time, had purchased three sets of deities. One is now in Detroit, Radha Kunja Bihari. One is now in Dallas, Radha Kalachanji, and up in Toronto. Shishi Radha Kishore Gopinath, I think. And we were leaving. We had completed our task, and we had our ticket to the train to return to Mumbai, when just as we were leaving, a telegram came to the door. I don't even know if they still have telegrams nowadays, but at that point in time, they would bring to you, wherever the address was, a little yellow paper, Western Union telegram, and it said, "Bring Didi's large size, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami." It was addressed to me. So suddenly there was a shift in the plans. Srimati continued on, and I stayed behind with my daughter, giving up our seat on the train. And generally it is not like you just, you know, walk into the shop and there you'll find the perfect set of Didis and you pay and you go. It's generally a little more complicated than that. And the three sets that we had got had taken us some time to complete the purchase, make sure everything was in order, to pack them carefully, which was something that I did, and get them on the lorry to get to the nearest port, which was usually going to go to Bombay and be shipped out of there. So I didn't know where these Didis were going to go. All I knew that Prabhupada said to bring them. And somehow it was surprisingly easy. Beautiful Krishna, beautiful Radha, got them packed. In those days you had to use like straw and a lot of cloth to wrap their wrists and their ankles and other vulnerable spots. Nowadays, sometimes modern techniques are really good. So nowadays they put the Didis in the box and then they shoot it with this foam that goes all around the body of the Didis, and just like they're packed in there, they can't budge. And you could practically speaking box, and neither will they break. Didis up in Farmington Hills, which were installed last year, were shipped like that. They were purchased in Jaipur, and then I hadn't purchased Didis for a long time, so I was a little concerned, and he kept saying, "Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry." Okay. You know, when somebody tells you not to worry, immediately you start to worry. But then he showed me the technique, and it was amazing. You know, so, but in those days, you had to worry. So then I didn't have a ticket to get back to Bombay, and it would be some time even traveling in the lower class, which we did. It was called third class on the boards, which meant there was no cushion seat, you know, it was three tiers. So I decided to go down with the truck, with the lorry. And we left in the late afternoon. So myself, my daughter, the driver of the lorry, a friend of his, and another friend of his, and we're all squished in on the front seat, and the one friend was on the other side of the driver, between the driver and the door, the other friend, and then me and my daughter, and then there was this other little skinny guy. So we're pretty packed up, and we drove all through the night into Mumbai, and definitely I wouldn't do that again now, but at the time I was very determined to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desire, and I wasn't thinking about the dangers involved, including just being a lady alone with these unknown men overnight in a lorry, you know, with my small child. And the next day we arrived in the morning, early in the morning, in Juhu. And the situation in Juhu at this time was that there was no accommodations yet for the devotees. Devotees were still living in tents. And Srila Prabhupada was in town specifically for the second Pandal program, and he was staying at a flat of a life member's brother who had passed on, so the flat had been vacated. And it was, these were wealthy people, so it was quite a nice situation. And as usual, when devotees take over a situation, they change everything around. So all the furniture, because it was a furnished place, was shoved into the front room, which we didn't think we'd be using. And Srila Prabhupada was in the master bedroom with a low table. And Shyam Sundar, my husband, was his secretary. And then one other devotee was his servant. And then there was a servant's quarters attached to the to this place. And when I arrived in Juhu, so the devotees, they weren't expecting anybody or anything, and here comes this great big huge, you know how the lorries are in India, they're very big and colorful, and they're kind of looking what's going on, and then I jump out with my daughter, which was surprising, and then the next thing you know, they're taking down two large boxes. And then the next thing you know, they got a phone call from Srila Prabhupada telling that I should come, because he knew I was arriving. He said that I should come with the deities to his place in Mumbai, to where he was staying. So we had to open up the boxes because they wouldn't fit in the vehicle that we had. Actually had a vehicle. It was an old taxi cab. It still had the partition in it, actually. So we had to take the deities out of the box, and they were put in the back seat along with me and my daughter. And there was one devotee, a former Parsi named Mahamsa, and he actually knew how to drive, had a license, so he was going to take us into Srila Prabhupada's place. That place also had an elevator, so when we arrived, the deities were put in the elevator, and we went up, knocked on the door, and were, you know, greeted, brought in. And the deities were put in the front room where all the other furniture had been stored. And there was a door directly to Prabhupada's room, into that room. So Prabhupada came out, he saw the deities, and immediately made obeisances, and then he said, bring them there. And he wanted them in his room, right in front of him, in front of the desk. And then he looked, so they were brought in, put in front of him. And then he looks at me and he goes, hold out your hand. So I held out my hand and he took a ring off his finger and he dropped it into my hand and said, see if it fits. So it fit on the middle finger. And I could understand he was very pleased with these deities. So they presided over the second Pandal program. That was held in Mumbai, large program. And then after that, they were packed up. I packed them up again, but I actually didn't know where they were going. For some reason, I just knew they were going somewhere. And later, when I saw a picture, I mean, this was quite a while later, like years later, because I wasn't in America for a very long time. So I saw a picture of them, and somehow the picture was there, but it didn't say they were in Chicago. So it wasn't really until like probably the early 90s, 91, 92, something like that, that I came here, and then I could understand This is where they were, you know. And one thing that's really wonderful here is that Kishore Kishori still wear crowns. Nowadays, the ISKCON thing is they just put piles of flowers on Radharani with some little, if she's lucky, some little thing sticking up. But Srila Prabhupada wrote in the first letter about deity worship that was sent to Satsarup Maharaj that they should wear helmets, meaning crowns. And when he was asked in London, he says, is it all right to wear turbans? Prabhupada said it was all right. He says, but I prefer crowns. But you never see crowns on Krishna anymore. You just see piles of cloth, you know. And Prabhupada even gave an instruction if they're going to wear turbans. And so it was okay occasionally to wear a turban. But he said they should be ornate, not just piles of cloth, you know. If you look at the pictures of the Goswami's deities, which he told us, if we observe the Goswami's deities, we could understand how to dress, how to serve. They do wear turbans, particularly Govinda in Jaipur. But they're so ornate. You know, there's special jewelry that is made just for turbans. And it looks really pleasing, very charming, and, you know, very opulent. And Prabhupada explained that we don't worship Radha and Krishna in the mood of Vrindavan. We are worshiping in the mood of awe and reverence. So therefore, this ornateness and, you know, the crowns. And if you think about it, another name for Radha Rani is Vrindavanishwari, which means Queen of Vrindavan. So what does the queen wear? Is crowns, you know. So it's very pleasing to see how very wonderfully they're served and dressed here. Okay, so Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 17, with the purports by the disciples on the order of Srila Prabhupada. And I was given text 13 through 20. And this is the history of Kaliya. So when you have a lot of verses, do you read the Sanskrit or are you just English until you get to the verse? What do you do? Okay, so since this is the last verse, verse 20, I'll read the verses and then we'll chant that one. And I have no clue. The time here right now is like 5 to 8. I was told the class is over at 8:30, although she did tell me if I could go a little longer, so we'll see how it works. Okay, text 13 and 14 are combined. I'll just read the last one, 12, because it kind of segues into here. So this is 12. Of all the serpents, only Kaliya came to know of this affair, and in fear of Garuda, he took up residence in that Jamuna lake. Later, Lord Krishna drove him out. So, 13 and 14. Resuming his description of Krishna's chastisement of Kaliya, Sukadeva Goswami continued, Krishna rose up out of the lake wearing divine garlands, fragrances, and garments, covered with many fine jewels and decorated with gold. When the cowherds saw him, they all stood up immediately, just like an unconscious person's senses coming back to life. Filled with great joy, they affectionately embraced him because they had been poisoned and had gone into an apparent death mode. So now Krishna has come, he's rescued them. 15. Having regained their vital functions, Jasoda, Rohini, Nanda, and all the other cowherd women and men went up to Krishna. O descendants of Kuru, even the dried up trees came back to life. Text 16, which is a long verse in terms of the Sanskrit, but Lord Balaram embraced his infallible brother and laughed, knowing well the extent of Krishna's potency. Out of great feelings of love, Balaram lifted Krishna up on his lap and repeatedly looked at him. The cows, bulls, and young female calves also achieved the highest pleasure. Great feelings of love from Balaram to Krishna. 17. All the respectable brahmanas, together with their wives, came forward to greet Nanda Maharaj. They said to him, your son was in the grips of Kaliya, but by the grace of providence, he is now free. 18. The brahmanas then advised Nanda Maharaj, to assure that your son Krishna will always be free from danger, you should give charity to the brahmanas. With a satisfied mind, O King, Nanda Maharaj then very gladly gave them gifts of cows and gold. 19. The greatly fortunate Mother Yasoda, having lost her son and then regained him, placed him on her lap. That chaste lady cried constant torrents of tears as she repeatedly embraced him. So you cry when you lose something, one type of tear, and again another type of tear when that lost item is regained, particularly if it's your son. 20. So word by word in translation. Tam, that. Ratrim, night. Tatra, there. Raja Indra, O most exalted of kings. Shutridbhyam, by hunger and thirst. Shrama, by fatigue. Karshitaha, weakened. Ushu, they remained. Braja ok asa, the people of Vrindavan. Gava, and the cows. Kalindya, of the Yamuna. Upakulata, near the shore. Tamratrim tatra rajendra. Tamratrim tatra rajendra. Tamratrim tatra rajendra. Sutrad Bhyam Trachut Bhyam Shramakashita Sutrid Bhyam Shramakashita Sutrid Bhyam Shramakashita. Yusur Rajokasagava. Yusur Raja Kasograva. Yusur Raja Kasoraja Kava. Palindya Upakulataha. Palindya Upakulataha. Palindya Upakulataha. Tam ratrim tatra rajendra. Sutrid bhyam shramakashitaha. Yusur rajokasho gava. Kalindya upakulataha.
Thank you.
And translation by his by the disciples of his divine grace. O best of kings, Pariket, because the residents of Vrindavan were feeling very weak from hunger, thirst, and fatigue, they and the cows spent the night where they were, laying down near the bank of the Kalindi. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that, although the people were weak from hunger and thirst, they did not drink the milk from the cows present, because they feared it had been contaminated by the serpent's poison. The residents of Vrindavan were so overjoyed to get back their beloved Krishna that they did not want to go back to their houses. They wanted to stay with Krishna on the bank of the Yamuna so that they could continuously see him, and thus they decided to take rest near the river bank. Can please repeat, O best of the kings, Pariket. Because the residents of Vrindavan were feeling very weak from hunger, thirst, and fatigue, they and the cows spent the night where they were, lying down near the bank of the Kalindi. Amaginatimirundasya janana sakalaya chakchunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Vaskachide Satarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gauravaka Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Vamsha kalpa turu vyascha kipa sindhu vayevyacha Vatitanam pavani vimbiyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha.
So I'm going through different pastimes of Krishna and Balaram having their different leelas with various demons. And I thought I would speak a little bit about this interesting dynamic of Krishna and demons, and how actually demons are connected to Krishna are actually very important for our understanding, and what the role they actually play. You know, it's not just an incidental role, they actually have a role to play. So, also before starting, I would just make a small comment I forgot to mention. Please take note of Sri Baladev today, because you may see something that he didn't have before on his head, which is a white peacock feather from Omkar, my friend from New Vrindavan, a white peacock. And Omkar likes to distribute his tail feathers. He drops them like all the other birds do, freely around. And I get as many as I can, because everybody wants to grab those feathers. And when I travel, I like to take them and pass them out. So you'll see these white feathers in temples around the world, and you can thank Omkar. So, with the help of demons, that's the title of this. So, sometimes we may think whether or not these very fantastic pastimes with demons are actually metaphors, allegories, or are they true? Do these things really happen? One time, a smaller, younger devotee declared that she didn't believe in Krishna because he does all these impossible things, and she gave the example of killing demons and all. So, not everybody will accept the logic of the Vaishnavas, which leads to Krishna. But most people will at least accept that such an agency as God, a higher power — nowadays they don't even want to say God, which is speak of give God a name, some higher power, divine one — but they'll accept that divinity exists. And this kind of faith is called Laukika Shraddha. And the faith assures that there is a controlling agency, that type of faith. And but the agency, that controlling agency, we are recognizing him as the transcendental cowherd, Krishna. And that is known as Aprakrita Shraddha. So Laukika, when you say Laukika Shraddha, it's like ordinary, kind of an ordinary, simple faith. You know that there's something there that's a little beyond your grasp, so you accept some little bit of faith is there. But the aprakrita means that it appears ordinary. While it appears ordinary, it is not ordinary. So just like Krishna came, this adorable little cowherd boy born into the family of Nanda and Yasoda, and even that was like totally incredible, you know, the background of his birth seemed ordinary, but was not. And then the Naralila, or the human-like pastimes of Krishna, are very difficult to understand. And people with what we call the small fund of knowledge, they'll either question, how could anybody do that? Or they'll, you know, they'll say, okay, you know, little kid chasing after cows, I could do that. And they'll try to equate themselves with Krishna. Yeah, I could do that, I could do that. Until it gets up to the incredible pastimes, such as pastimes with the gopis, which are very difficult to understand. Either you come to, you know, some people come to the conclusion that, oh, he's just a debauchee, meaning a fallen person. And at one time this person came to Prabhupada and he was arguing that, you know, Krishna's just, how can Krishna be God? He's chasing after women like a really fallen person, you know. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, and not only chasing after women, they were the wives of the part that really got this guy, was they were somebody else's wives. So, you know, there he was, chasing after the wives, somebody else's wives. Really illicit behavior. And Prabhupada looked at him. He goes, "You're also exhibiting illicit behavior. Because you are assuming your wife is for your enjoyment, but actually everyone is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So therefore, your behavior towards your wife is also illicit because she's there for Krishna's enjoyment." So then the man just couldn't answer that one. He had to like give up his argument. But prior to this great Rasalila dance, you know, that was taking place in the dead of the night, the Bhagavatam tells about these extraordinary feats of the killing of demons, demon after demon. And these superhuman feats are not ordinary. They're actually extraordinary. And superhuman, you know, superhuman feats, they cannot be ordinary. And so much so, we could get dismiss him just like that girl. I can't believe in Krishna because he just does all these things like, you know, killing those demons. So we could dismiss him or have some doubts. How can this be, you know? But if we dismiss him altogether, or if we relativize him, so some people want to say, okay, so maybe there was some kind of superhuman demoniac person, like, you know, there's a few superhuman demoniac persons nowadays. We read about them every day in the paper. One of them managed to become the president of America. You know, there's, we'll just speak of other ones. But in the Bhagavatam, you know, if we take these incredible personalities to be some kind of allegorical situation, or kind of try to compartmentalize them into something our little brains can understand, you know, like what we say, dumb them down into something we can grasp. In doing that, we run a big risk. And what is that risk? It's that the demons in our own heart, in other words, the anarthas, will continue to live on, and the truth will become obscured to us, and the beauty of Krishna's higher rasas will remain concealed. This aprakata shraddha, it won't waken up, it won't blossom within our heart. So with this in mind, then a few words in praise of the demons is actually appropriate, because what they do is indirectly promote the transcendental truth of the aprakata lila. Narada Muni, Sage Narada, said in the Tham, "In my opinion, even devotees like me cannot attain such absorption in God as those who think of him in enmity," like Sisipal, you know, always thinking of Krishna, but what was he thinking? I want to kill him, you know. Kamsa, he was in fear and horror of Krishna, so he was consumed with thoughts of Krishna. So Narada Muni was saying that he'd like to have that same intensity of thoughts. Of course, his would be in reverse gear, which would be overflowing love. So the demons such as Shishupala and Dantavakara, Kamsa and others, they actually brought out the glory of Krishna by their preoccupation with him. So Lord Chaitanya has recommended the easy way to approach Krishna. The way to approach Krishna is simple, but not easy. You know, Prabhupada said simple for the simple, you know, difficult for the complex. So within Shuddha Bhakta, our pure devotional service, are many gradations of transcendental experience. And pure devotion, there are also different like the Madhurya Ras, where the devotee has absolutely no concern for themselves, just like those gopis. They didn't care. They just took off. They knew they ran the risk of being completely obliterated and kicked out of their homes. They wouldn't be allowed back even, you know, but they didn't care. So that was very high level. So Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur has shown us a way in his analysis of the Chaturshloki of the Bhagavatam, and he also recommends taking help from the demons. So in the concluding verse of Krishna's instruction to Brahma in the second chapter, 936, which is forming the basis of the Bhagavatam, Krishna tells Brahma both directly and indirectly to search out his ultimate prospect in life. Anvayavirata kapyam yatsrat sarvatra sarvada. So in the opening stanza, the culmination of his life's work, Vyas utters the same, anvyad itarata. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests that this vyatirek habyam indirectly means to search out, indirectly means that in order to reach the goal, the highest goal, Madhurya Ras, we must first cleanse our hearts of the anarthas, the impediments. And sometimes it is, including Bhaktivinoda, has given an equation between the particular demons and particular anarthas. But this doesn't mean that the demons do not exist. Some people think, oh, okay, it's only just an example and an allegory. But no, they exist. But they also, by their behavior, represent different anarthas. So the bhakti develops in the heart in progressive stages from the sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti to prema bhakti. And in the sadhana bhakti, the stage of the bhajana kriya, this devotional practice, is coming from the guru. In other words, once we determine we want to practice Krishna consciousness, we need to find a guru. And we need to follow the instructions of the guru. You know, that's basic math, Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter. And in this stage, the task of overcoming the anarthas begins. And with this higher goal in mind, Srila Bhaktivinoda recommends discussing the leelas of Krishna, where he kills the demons in Vrindavan. So, yes, it may seem very unbelievable that these demons exist, but then is it any less believable that there's millions of gallons of water floating in the air? You know, in the form of rain clouds. You know, we know that logistically by our math and by our science. But if you think about it, there's this big cloud floating in the air and there's millions of gallons of water. How do you wrap your mind around that, you know? So then why is it so difficult then that there's demons who exist? And these are anarthas within ourselves. They are symbolized by the demons which actually exist. So, you know, the question, are they merely symbolic representations of the demons in our heart, or do they actually exist? You know, some demons like Putana, Bhakta, Agasura, Dhanakasura, and so on. And if we decide they're symbolic, then the same could be said of Krishna. If we're going to take the demons as symbolic, then even we may start looking at Krishna as symbolic. And certainly there are interpretations of the Bhagavad Gita where that is actually happening. Prabhupada pointed that out immediately, early on, that Krishna is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not symbolic or not a, you know, not an allegory. So Prabhupada teaches also that the leelas of Krishna are to be taken literally. And the completeness of the Lord's leelas are different from what we imagine in our beginning stages of sadhana bhakti. something like, you know, the difference between a one-dimension representation and a three-dimensional exhibit. Like you see a picture, a photograph, and it's a flat thing, but then you actually see the object. Let's say you take a picture of a car, you know, just for, so you see the car. Then you see the car, and you see all the features of the car. So in the beginning, we have a limited understanding to fully appreciate the transcendental beauty with our material eyes, as Atta Sri Krishna Namadi Navyat Gayam Indriya. So even in the writings of Vyasadeva, there's a certain limitation. This Shruti Bir Vimir Griyam, that Brahma cannot be described entirely in words, yet much can be said about him. So we rely on such descriptions and bhakti rahasya, the mystery of bhakti, there's a bhakti rahasya, mystery of bhakti, to attain a comprehensive understanding of the absolute. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada's insistence on a literal understanding of Krishna, Leela, should be clear. And if we're taking the Leelas of Krishna to be literal, then obviously Krishna is also literally existing. Krishna Leela can serve as a metaphor for those persons with a political worldview like Gandhi's Gita, or a psychological overview that's like the philosopher Jung's Gita, or any number of other scenarios, but these are considerably less effective than the Bhagavad Gita as it is, as they often divert the reader away from Krishna. This is a great instance where we have to be very careful about when we recommend people to read the Gita, make sure you recommend them Bhagavad Gita as it is. Otherwise, they can go in the bookstore, there's so many Gitas, and they can pick up a Gita that is actually taking the reader away from Krishna, because the author is just some kind of a politician, or a philosopher, or just a Sanskrit scholar with no actual personal connection to Krishna. So they're, with their, you know, particular worldview, overview, are not going to be able to connect persons with Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada means as Krishna intended, as it is, Krishna intended. Just as one may speak and yet be misunderstood by those who don't know the speaker very well. You know, just like each of us has our own particular personality, and we may have a certain type of speech pattern sometime. And sometimes people, if they don't know you, or they don't know the speaker, can actually misunderstand what is intended by the speaker. I have that happen sometimes because I have a particular sense of humor. So sometimes I'll say something in my particular sense of humor, and it's not understood by some persons. So they're like, what did she say? Why did she say that? You know, where the people who know me, it's very clear. So just like Krishna is speaking clearly, but if you don't know him, you may not get it. So, Krishna is known by his devotees alone. You know, this bhakti amam abhijanti yavanyastasmi tatatvaha. So, to the extent we're troubled by anarthas, these unwanted things in the heart, we cannot appreciate the transcendental reality of the personality of Godhead. So when prema is obtained, when we get to that stage of prema, then automatically it means all of the anarthas are removed, because prema and anarthas cannot exist side by side. In the beginning stage, there's that mix. In the ultimate stage, there's no question. So the material body awarded due to one's material situation, it's not suitable for the experience of prema. because our body and senses are limited. The beauty, aroma, sound, touch, and taste of Krishna are revealed through Krishna Prema, but it requires a suitable receptacle in order to be assimilated by the soul. Spiritual senses are interchangeable, like the Lord's. I had this experience in 1967 in San Francisco after Lord Jagannath arrived. And even though there was dimension to, you could say, in Lord Jagannath, our vision and understanding was quite linear, quite flat. And Prabhupada told us, well, now that Jagannath has come, you must feed him. Everything you offer must be offered to him. And he looked at me and he said, so you get him a plate, a silver plate, with one goblet, two bowls, and a spoon. And then he added, a plate that no one else has eaten from. Because we were so neophyte, we would have probably gone to the second-hand shop and grabbed something. So at that point, he had to remind us. So then, you know, the devotees were thinking, okay, you're going to hand him, put this plate. So one of the devotees asked, well, and Prabhupada said he would eat it, right? So how does he eat? That was the question. Prabhupada looked, I remember him just kind of looking at each of us, and he goes, that you cannot understand. He says, he can eat with his eyes, he can eat with his elbow, he can eat with his knees. That you cannot understand. He can simply glance and taste everything. That we could not understand. So when Krishna reveals his beauty, all of our newly acquired spiritual senses are activated, and all the senses can turn into eyes to capture the essence of Krishna's beauty. And when he reveals his scent, the senses and the mind all turn into noses, and so on, with all the transcendental affairs of Prema Ras. And thus it is that a suitable spiritual body is required to experience the spiritual reality of Sri Krishna. So this political, the psychological, the sociological, and other world views have little value for the transcendentalist, the realist, if you will. You know, people sometimes, we're talking to them, they'll go, well, in the real world, I mean, even devotees will say, well, in the real world, and like, what real world? Are you talking outside the door here? You know, where everybody's eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and doing all types of abominable activities, that's the real world. The real world is the spiritual world. So we are the realist. We are the realistic people, or we're trying to be. So those who are filled with material desire, they actually will gravitate more readily toward these worldviews, because these worldviews are closer to our material understanding. You know, but the symbolic interpretations of Krishna aimed at improving our understanding of human condition will lead us, if we're taking these as symbolic, then it will lead us to believe that this condition, whatever particular condition you're facing or you're in, is all in all. We will have a difficult time to actually experience transcendental qualities and activities. So the interpretations miss the point of Krishna Lila, and they actually hold a relative value if the greater picture of the soul is not obscured by the shadow of the mundane human concerns. You know, like, you know, there's so much concern, and understandably so, like save the earth, save the ocean, save the trees. There's so many things, you know. I have a particular, like, I don't like seeing trees just hacked down, you know. But I know that saving the trees is not going to save anything ultimately except a few trees. the interpretations miss the point. And Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if he's considered to be mythological, then we will never be able to save the most valuable thing of all, which is our own souls and the souls of others. So these interpretations miss the point. Srila Prabhupada's insistence upon avoiding symbolic interpretations of Krishna Lila is important, because without such, the ultimate reality could actually easily disappear, as it does in these other translations of Gita that seek to bring out the so-called deeper meaning of the text. Like when Krishna says, surrender unto me, and one of these nonsense mundane interpreters of the Gita said, Krishna doesn't really mean that. He's just, you know, he gives his spin on what it means. He means the divine within you. Okay, but what is that divine that's within us? It's Krishna. But the fellow wants to take Krishna out of the picture. So this is the risk that is run when you start looking at the anartas, are the activities of the demons, in simply an allegorical sense. So when they say they want to like expose us to a deeper meaning, and then they take Krishna out of the picture, what could be deeper? What could be deeper than the reality of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You know, who is both in all places and at all times. He's moving all about from place to place. He's performing carefree, incredible at pastimes. That's pretty deep. And that which is inconceivable to the ordinary persons is as much so to the great thinkers. Even though they're big thinkers, they just can't grasp or accommodate, you know, that Brahman is both immanent and transcendent at the same time. This Achintaveda Veda Tattva, they don't get it. There's a very nice verse in the Pajavali by Rupa Goswami, and he says, to whom can I speak? Who will believe me when I say that Krishna, the Supreme Personality, the Supreme Brahman, is hunting for gopis in the bushes along the bank of the Yamuna? In this way, the Lord performs his activities. So here is Krishna doing this beautiful, sweet, deep pastime. But if you try to tell someone, you know, some big thinker or somebody who's an impersonalist, that, well, the Supreme Lord is on the bank of the Jamuna hunting for gopis in the bushes, they'll just, you know, blank you out. Bhakti Bhagavatam Grahyam Nabudyana Chatiktaya. That one should understand the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam by hearing them from real devotees, means devotees of Krishna. One cannot understand them simply by erudite scholarship or sharp intelligence. This is Madhyalila, one of the verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So by applying these principles to our sadhana, our bhakti becomes devotee. Prabhupada actually defined bhakti as devotional service to Krishna. Now, bhakti is a word that is just tossed about very freely nowadays, you know, like the Bhakti Fest out there in California where any darn thing is going on. But when we speak of bhakti, we are accepting bhakti as meaning devotional service to Krishna. In Prabhupada's purport on 620, he writes that the Puranas, or the old histories, are sometimes neglected by intelligent men who consider their descriptions as mythology. But he says, actually, the descriptions of the Puranas, or the old histories of the universe, are factual. And although they're not chronological, you know, so even in the Bhagavatam, sometimes things go forward and backwards, but it doesn't dismiss the reality. The Puranas record the chief incidents that have occurred over many millions of years, not only on this planet, but other planets within the universe. So, therefore, all the realized Vedic scholars speak with reference to the Puranas, to the incidents. And Srila Rupa Goswami accepts the Puranas to be as important as the Vedas themselves. So therefore, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he quotes this following verse from the Brahma Yamala, which is devotional service of the Lord that ignores the authorized Vedic scriptures, like the Upanishads and the Puranas and the Narada Pancharatra, is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. So devotees of Krishna must not only refer to Vedas, but also the Puranas. And one shouldn't foolishly consider that these Puranas are mythological. Prabhupada points out, if they were mythological, Sukadeva Goswami would not have taken the trouble to recite the old historical incidents concerning the life of Vajramila. Why would he bother if it was just mythological? And we've heard often this statement, religion without knowledge is sentiment, which leads to fanaticism. So the world is not black and white. This black and white Vaishnavism has been addressed by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Sri Krishna Samhita, and he uses the term Bharavahi, another one who carries a heavy load, to describe those Vaishnavas, Bharavahi Vaishnavas. They identify more on the surface of the transcendental precepts of Sri Chaitanya than with their essence. So those deep Vaishnavas, they are Bharavahi. The ones who are not deeply exploring, they're like shallow. Like, I'm that type of person. Bharavahi. We're on the surface of the trance, and we are accepting Krishna. We're accepting his teachings, but more on the surface. But then the Vaishnavas whose ranks reach up to the intermediate bhaktas, these Madhyam Madhikaris, that's still Bharavahi. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote that this Bharavahi Vaishnav must become Saragrahi Vaishnav. So what is a Saragrahi Vaishnav? It means essential Vaishnavs must give up the heavy burden of anarthas that are holding us back from love of Godhead. And relevant to the discussion, in Sri Krishna Samhita, Bhaktivinoda elaborately described the 18 demons of Varaha Lila. He described them symbolically as anarthas of the heart, of the sadhaka, which must be eliminated in order to advance to bhakti and ultimately to prema bhakti. But he didn't limit them to symbolism. He explains in Krishna Sikshamrita that the conduct of Sri Krishna is twofold. It's external and occasional. So in Goloka, the eternal conduct in the Astakali Lila, it's always existing. Krishna's interactivities are always existing. And in Bomba Vrindavan, the Astakali Lila is mixed with occasional Lilas. Like leaving Braj and returning and killing Asuras are occasional demons. And impediments on the path of Sudha Bhakta are many. There are so many impediments. So only the diligent and the introspective sadhaka, or the introspective devotee, will be able to surmount these obstacles, invoking this sadhana bhakti, beginning with the sadhana bhakti, and then with the grace of the Lord moving upward and upward. Sukadeva Goswami concluded his description of the Rasa Lila with an important verse in 10:33, 39, and he describes the efficacy of hearing about Krishna and his pastimes in general, because quite often Prabhupada would mention this point, how people want to just get right up to that part about the Rasa Leela and just hear about that. But Sukadeva Swami says, we have to hear about that, but we have to hear also about the pastimes in general. And he's used the name Vishnu rather than Krishna to help us appreciate the fact that these are the pastimes of God. And by using the name Vishnu, he's indicated the indirect cultivation of parabhakti via discussion of those pastimes. So discuss pastimes where the demons are killed. And this is the appropriate course. Jiva Goswami has also indirectly confirmed this in his commentary, stressing the word dhira. Dhira, it means sense controlled. And if one's senses aren't controlled, having cleansed one's heart to some extent can be further, only if the senses are controlled, having cleansed one's heart to some extent, then can be further freed from all of the remaining traces of karma or material desire by discussing the higher lila, having gone through the various lilas leading up to Rasa Leela. So kama means lust, and lust, this kama also means desire in general. And if one is not committed to conquering this lust, and hearing these pastimes can have the opposite effect. Hearing the pastimes, the higher pastimes, if the lust is still raging, then it can have the opposite effect and increased the lusty desire within the heart. So Sukadeva Goswami says that faith derived by hearing from the Guru Parampara is required for such hearing, not just, you know, grab the book and head for the 10th canto. Just like some people will say, well, Srila Prabhupada brought the 10th canto via the Krishna book, which he did, but there is so much purports interwoven. He didn't just give the translation and leave it at that. He gave such highlights, such purports to help us understand in the correct way. So, in Krishna, Chaitanya Leela, such as Krishna Leela, it's like similarly two-sided. As Vishnu within the Bhagavatam killed Putana and gave her this Vatsalya Ras, the Yuga avatar, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, delivered people from their demoniac tendencies, and Mahaprabhu combined as Radha and Krishna to bestow unparalleled prema. So through this Nama Sankirtan, our inner demons will be destroyed, cleansing our heart towards cultivating love of God. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj has explained that, therefore, it's Vishnu within the body of Krishna through whom he kills the demons. But killing the demons is secondary work. He says, now I'll tell you the primary reason. And he said that Chaitanya's preaching is the indirect or secondary cause of his descent. Killing the demons within is an incidental but very necessary element of cultivation of love of God. So bestowing love of God is the primary reason of Mahaprabhu's appearance. And by his grace, we can find the secret path to Krishna Leela. And we can therefore even appreciate the demons along the way, knowing that the only enemy is within our own hearts. So Krishna's killing of the demons isn't actually the most wonderful thing and hard to believe. Because after all, to be God, God must do something wonderful. If he's not doing something wonderful, then he's not God. So that he does these apparently ordinary things, such as becoming one's intimate friend, parent, or lover, this is his most wonderful aspect. What may look as ordinary is not aprakata. And we can only know these wonders by the grace of Mahaprabhu and his intimate associates, the Guru Parampara. So those are just a few words, some notes I had taken on this topic of understanding the role of the demons and how that actually we can learn from them, because actually they have exposed Krishna's greatness, further exposed his greatness. So, any questions, comments? Yeah.
Thank you, Malati Prabhu. It's wonderful to have you here, and especially hear the story of. It's always wonderful to hear how.
I have a hard time hearing, so you can get to.
Yeah, it's always wonderful to hear Shishi Kishore Kishore's narration from you.
Yeah.
I have one question. I have actually a couple of questions, but the first one is you mentioned Narada Muni's prayer to Krishna in terms of appreciating in one sense how demons, they obtain salvation also, but also the type of absorption that they have in thinking constantly on Krishna, obviously in an inimical way, but that absorption in itself had a very auspicious result for them. And I'm just thinking the difficulty that is there sometimes when you observe demons. The one that came to mind was, remember that African-American fellow in the 70s who was part of the deprogrammers?
Oh yeah, Ted Patrick.
Ted Patrick, yes, mm-hmm. Who was so, it was so absurd and in enmity towards the
devil. One of his children didn't become a full-on Hare Krishna, but became appreciative of the Krishna consciousness movement.
Just see, so maybe. So it's difficult to put those together, that someone who is so inimical can actually reap the benefit of that absorption by, you know, becoming.
But of course, they won't get Krishna prem. They'll just like in the sense of Putana, she got that Vatsalya, she got the parental ras, which is not a low thing. It's not to be dismissed, of course. And like in the case of Kurukshetra, many of the persons on the, you know, who were inimical, they were obtaining more like majoti fold, you know, they didn't get a personal relationship, but they got liberated. You know. So we don't want to misuse that, you know. Thinking, oh, it doesn't matter, as long as I think of Krishna I can do any darn thing. That's not actually quite that way, you know.
Yeah, actually I think it brings to mind to appreciate even I remember also hearing Srila Prabhupada one time tolerating some impersonalist person who was blaspheming or saying things about Krishna, and Prabhupada, the devotees were very agitated, but Prabhupada was very calm, and at the end say, you know, he mentioned Krishna so many times, so he allowed him to constantly be, you know, saying Krishna's name.
Yeah.
And he was saying, oh, that this is his benefit. So Prabhupada also extend his mercy like that.
Well, some persons were actually, there's a difference between being inimical and ignorant. You know, so if a person is speaking in ignorance, there could be more tolerance than if the person was actually inimical, you know, in their mindset. Yeah.
Did you observe sometime Srila Prabhupada making that discrimination?
Yes. Well, you yourself mentioned how sometimes you'd allow the person to speak in an impersonal manner, but they were saying Krishna's name, so go on, keep speaking, keep speaking. But at the end of the day, he also corrected them. You know, sometimes you say, okay, have you finished? Have you finished? In one case, the person says, no, I have some. Okay. And then he said, okay, that is enough. And then made the correction.
The other thought or question, you know, that or appreciation that I have in your presentation was thinking of that point of Srila Prabhupada giving us the Krishna book. And the part that is not appropriate to reveal this intimate passions of Krishna to people that are not ready to actually receive, or to the faithless, or people who have no faith to give this higher, you know, pastimes of Krishna, because you won't understand it. And nevertheless, Srila Prabhupada gave us the Krishna book, as you said, with, you know, his Bhaktivedanta purpose very much embedded in.
Yeah.
However, the fact is that, you know, we receive and we distribute Krishna book to, you know, to the masses.
Yeah.
And sometimes you hear also Prabhupada saying this Bhagavata Sapta.
Yeah.
In general, it's not.
Well, that's a different thing too, on many levels. One being, in general, those Bhagavat Saptas are charging money, which isn't appropriate. And the persons who are speaking are not always in an authorized line of disciplic succession. That's another point, so that they haven't been, even if they, like, who among us is perfectly realized? Nobody here, you know, we can't make that claim. But if we've heard correctly from Prabhupada, from one of his disciples, we've heard correctly, and we're passing it on, that is parampara. And the effect will be there. Prabhupada gives the example of an master electrician and an apprentice. So the apprentice doesn't know so much, but he's following the instruction of the master the master electrician, and so the effect will be there. Yeah. So it's essential that we, in Prabhupada's words, don't add or subtract. We listen carefully, don't add or subtract. He said, you can speak in your own words, but don't alter the essence, don't change the meaning. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Kishore, Kishore, Ki Jai, Jagannath Subhadra Balade, Ki Jai, Shishi Gaur Nitai, Ki Jai.
Grace Malati Mataji, Ki Jai.
Just like, I'll just make one comment, that some people have an objection to going past the last purport that Srila Prabhupada made in the 13th chapter of the 10th canto. They won't go past. Well, that's a little foolish, in that Srila Prabhupada wanted the Bhagavatam finished. So he left something, by design or not, for his disciples to do. And during that time, they were completely connected with serving Prabhupada's desire, you know, so that one should not be hesitate to read these further chapters and the last two cantos of the Bhagavatam, because they're there by the desire of Srila Prabhupada. Okay, sure.